me pones un ejemplo. Entonces, si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Just Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker movement, with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled and put in boxes. But this is no longer. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. You know, resilience is the ability to bounce back from challenges and setbacks. Resilience is a muscle that can be strengthened through practice and perseverance. It involves maintaining a positive outlook and finding ways to overcome obstacles. Dr. Stephen Sideroff, a renowned psychologist, executive consultant, and expert in resilience, longevity, and optimal performance. He is an associate professor at UCLA's Giffen School of Medicine. He has conducted pioneering research and has helped establish innovative approaches in mind-body medicine and optimal functioning. With a focus on stress management and mental health, Dr. Sideroff has made significant contributions to the field of addiction, treatment, and neurofeedback. He is the author of a book, The 9 Pillars of Resilience, The Proven Path to Master Stress, Slow Aging, and Increase Vitality. Today, we are delighted that he shares his knowledge and expertise on the ways we too can improve navigating life's challenges by increasing our resilience, which will enhance our mental health and overall well-being. Dr. Sideroff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jules. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm excited, and our listeners are, because this is a topic that is so much needed, so much information that's out there. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get involved in this work?
Certainly. I started out actually in brain research, and but very early on, I realized I wanted to move into clinical work because even though I was enjoying trying to find out how the brain works with regard to learning and memory, I wanted to be able to speak to my subjects, ask them how they're feeling, and to get responses from them. And I was not able to do that with the animals that I was working with in my brain research. So I moved into clinical, and very quickly in my work in clinical, and early on, I was doing a lot of work with addiction. And I realized that stress is one of the primary modulators of our well-being, that we can be going all along really well in our lives, both as individuals or in relationships. But as soon as the stresses in our lives begin to add up, it strains our ability to cope and breaks down our emotional, mental, and physical well-being. And so for those reasons, I wanted to address what I felt very early on was one of the primary issues that all of us face in our lives is how to best manage our stress. And so that took me on a path that I have continued on, sort of morphing from stress management into a broader context of optimal functioning. Because if we want to handle stress, we want to check into all the areas in our lives that where we are vulnerable. So whether it's childhood wounding, whether it's work stress, all of these things, we want to be coming from an optimal perspective, an optimal mindset, and looking at all aspects of our lives. And from that perspective, I developed my model of resilience.
Very interesting. You know, one of the things that I think about when we chat about resilience, oftentimes within the settings that I work in, we do talk about work as being one of those underlying, you know, factors. If we were able to achieve happiness and health and success, then we can master resilience, it almost feels like. But when you break it down, it sounds to me there's more science to this. When you're expressing more that comes from the environment, what we have control over, and some of the things that we don't have control over. Can you explain a little bit to us, is there something that begins to shift in our thought processes as the same stressors are still relevant? Or are there just numerous things that are similar that prompt this stress to continue to ongo? And now we have this one thing, I get stressed with this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important, Jules, to make a distinction between what's going on outside of ourselves that may be creating stress in our lives, and then what's going on inside ourselves that helps make us more capable of dealing with whatever is outside. And so we all have different levels of stress in our lives, environments that can cause stress, and as you say, many factors that are outside of our control. So in work environments, we may be dealing with a boss or fellow employees who are very difficult to deal with. And we might wind up thinking, oh, my life is so stressful because of these factors that I don't have any control over. And I like to frame the process of resilience by how we as individuals prepare ourselves through the process of healing, through the process of having an optimal mindset, and how we approach those stresses as factors that we do have control over. And so that's what we always want to pay attention to, what we can do so that we have a greater capacity to handle the stresses in our lives. That's really the basis behind resilience, is growing our capacity so that we keep with each challenge that we face, we learn, we grow, and we become more and more capable of dealing with the stresses in our lives.
You know, as time has gone by and we have shifted, and prior to any of these models that are happening now where people practice meditation, yoga, and they have these new coping capabilities, if you will, I have seen, as I've aged and grown, looking at some of these nuances that have changed, in where a person now says, when I deal with this type of situation, here's the type of resilient or coping skill that I'm going to put up to deal with that. When I am dealing with a scenario such as, if I feel hungry, to stop the stressor, I'm just going to have coffee to kind of offset that. Is resilience something that we need to really think about to put into practice? Or is it, as we're beginning to grow, to become sort of our innate ability as we get better?
So the interesting thing, if we are to think about innate abilities, one of the problems that we all face is that we are set up for having difficulties with stress. Interestingly enough, because our stress response, our survival response, the fight or flight response, mm-hmm. does not really match or fit with the stresses we deal with in our lives. I mean, think about it, Jules. How many of the stresses you deal with can you handle and cope with by either fighting the stress or running from it? Mm. Right? Very few. But yet, that's how our body prepares for the stresses in our lives. And so our body mobilizes, our muscles tighten up, preparing us to fight or flight. But then we have to hold in that energy, because if I'm talking to a person that I'm in conflict with, I'm not going to punch them out and I'm not going to run from them. So there's that imbalance. The other imbalance is between the environment in which we learn to use our stress response, and that's our childhood environment and our adult environment. So we adapt, we learn how to be in the world based on the lessons of our childhood. But many of those lessons do not translate into our adult world. So if you have a parent who's very critical of you, or if you have a parent who's ready to be angry and express that anger toward you, so that that childhood environment is a dangerous environment, those become your expectations as an adult. And if those are your expectations, you're continually mobilizing the fight or flight response in anticipation of some danger. And that doesn't work. And that's what a lot of us deal with all the time, is turning on the stress response too intensely, too frequently, and for too long a duration. And so resilience is about learning to optimally adapt to our present environment and learn from experience, so that when a stress is over, we consciously turn off the stress response instead of continuing it. And that if we have something happening tomorrow that may be scary to us, we don't spend 24 hours from now till then mobilized for it, which if we're thinking about it and we have anxiety about it, we're engaging our body prematurely. So resilience is about the exquisite use of our stress response, mobilizing the energy, our personal energy, because life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. But yet most of us start each day with the our lives being a sprint and what we need to do today.
You know, I want to say you brought this up, and I was about to talk about this fight or flight mode in these hypothetical situations. I know that there are some of us who are preparing our work week and we're thinking about what we're going to wear tomorrow. We start thinking about the weather. And if the weather isn't appeasing to what we believe is adequate to the potential outfit that we plan to wear, there's a level of frustration that begins to grow in us. And these are some of the areas that sometimes we as people struggle in specific things. That's why we have umbrellas. That's why we have raincoats, and we have all of these things. And we all understand that. But some of us, to some degree, really stay on these stress points and really make it about that. And then it becomes part of our language. I hate the rain. I don't like what to wear. You start struggling. And many of us, to kind of protect ourselves, says, I'm going to wear black or dark brown, right? To kind of, you know, fight this off. When we're talking about fight or flight, and these are just some basic examples, what are some steps that you believe can be useful for our listeners when we're thinking about the basic stressor and I'm going to apply my resilient skill to match?
Yes. So let me give a little bit of some foundational information. We all have two branches to our nervous system. The sympathetic, which is the branch that we engage for stress, and that is what produces the fight or flight response in our body. And then the parasympathetic, or the recovery branch. And that, when we go into parasympathetic, our body goes into a state and a process of restoring all the resources used up during the stress response. And you can imagine that those two branches of our nervous system need to be in balance, right? You can't just continually use up energy from your body. You will exhaust your body. And this is what a lot of people experience in burnout, or simply feeling fatigued too much of the time, or having difficulty falling asleep because we're turning on the stress response too much. And so the first thing that we all need to realize is that we all have a limited amount of personal energy. The energy that our body can produce to deal with anything and everything we're engaged in our lives. So that's the first thing, is that we recognize that anytime we respond to a stress, we are using energy that we somehow need to recuperate by going into a recovery mode. If we are spending too much time in defend and protect, like expecting danger, we're not giving our bodies enough time to go into that recovery mode to restore resources used up. And so that's one of the primary things to for everybody to recognize and to think about. I have a certain amount of personal energy, and I need to be, you know, more conscious of how I'm using it. And so throughout the day, you want to find sometimes, even if it's, and this is interesting, even if it's just 3 minutes, for example, of taking a break from the stresses, going inside and doing some breathing and relaxing and letting go as part of this effort and intention to keep the two systems in balance. So let's with that in mind, you want to think about whether you're using your energy constructively or destructively. So, for example, I find a lot of people have what I refer to as emotional reactions to other people. Someone says something stupid, someone says something hurtful or harmful, and we have a big reaction to it. Now, while that may be understandable, that reaction requires some of your personal energy. Mm-hmm. And so you want to find some way of letting go and stopping that activation of your nervous system as quickly as possible. Okay. And so that's where it's important. Am I having an impact on my environment with this use of energy, or am I just wasting it? And so there are a lot of people in this world who can cause you to get upset, but you have to decide, is this in my own best interest to react to this person? Or to say, you know, I don't care. There are going to be people out there who are not important to me in my life. I don't need to react to everything going on around me. And when we begin to think of resilience in that way, we begin to have a handle on optimal functioning.
I mean, great answer. And for me, there's so much that you talked about, and I'll try to summarize in my own ways to understand. But we talk about this big reaction, this wasting of energy. This is, to me, something that during the grief process, so much energy is expended. Many of us get caught up between the loss of a loved one, between the loss of the memories. There's so much that's happening to our minds and bodies at the same time. We lose appetite, we lose sleep. And you talked about having an opportunity to take space. Oftentimes, I talk about a former guest, Dr. Greg Hammer, and he talked about having a 3-minute meditation model. And he talks about the GAIN model, and GAIN referencing gratitude, acceptance, intention, and being non-judgmental. If we give ourselves an opportunity of a 3-minute break, it does wonders to how we do that. Imagine if we were to practice this daily and we had a routine, almost a ritual out of it, how much we will be able to build our defend and protect kind of mode and the other energies that you were referencing, which I think will be optimal to our overall health. And if we buy into nutrition and taking care of our physical needs as well, it sounds to me that if we are start making better decisions about these things, our resilience will somehow get better, improve, or kind of not be expended, where we're losing energy on things that really do not supply us with something positive, AKA the triggers, if you will. So some of the things that you talked about really hit home for me. And I know that my listeners are really thrilled to listen to this great talk. I want to talk a little bit about COVID. And there was a recent article that I read in the American Psychology of Associations called Stress in America. And they talked about collective trauma, that since the pandemic, there are some data that talked about there's an impact on our own well-being, right? And this is about the increase in chronic illnesses, you know, people that we lost or we were impacted by COVID, the loss of space and time. And some of these things that we lost really impacted people of different ages for various ways. So the data showed, let's say ages 35 to 44, it increased about 48% of their stress. And in 2019, they talked about 58%. And what they called as collective trauma is the entire thing of dealing with the pandemic, having to lose, regain this. How does resilience play a factor when we're thinking of now such a situation as difficult as the pandemic still is for many of us? How do we build from those big losses and get better?
Yeah. Well, I think you're bringing up an important point when you talk about COVID and its impact, because one of the things about COVID is, again, it's factors happening outside of ourselves, and it's a factor that gives us a sense of loss of control. And one of the things that's very important to growing your resilience is feeling more in control of your life and your world. And so anything that gives you a sense of lack of control is going to increase your stress and reduce your resilience. So, you know, it's interesting, Jules. One day I was listening to a song on the radio, and it evoked an emotion in me, a sadness. And, you know, sometimes when that happens, as is my approach, I will check in with myself to see if I'm sitting on any unfinished business that this song is triggering in me. And as I went into that process, I realized that what I was tapping into in terms of a sadness inside of me was a reaction to not only COVID, but all of the traumas and all of the global stresses that we're all facing. You know, the war in Ukraine, the conflict in Israel and Gaza, the issues with other countries. And you know, while much of the time we try and push this to the side, or for some of us, we watch too much news, all of it seeps into our consciousness or unconsciousness and has an impact. And so it reminded me of how we're all very susceptible to so much going on in our life, in our day, that we don't have control over, such as this everything around COVID. And so in the process of resilience, first, it's important to recognize that impact and to do whatever grieving or emotional release that's part of that recognition. But at some point, we also have to let go. At some point, we also have to go, what can I do about this issue in the world or in my life that's having an impact on me? Let me do what I can do. Let me take whatever steps. If I want to be a volunteer and give my service someplace, use my particular talents and ability to help others, give service, let me do that. But once I do that, I need to let go and not keep carrying the upset in my head to continually trigger my stress response. And that's an important aspect of my fifth pillar of resilience, which is mental balance and mastery. And this is about our mindset. And this is about how we feel control in our lives. And that's to do what we can do. And then first is feel the feelings and then do what we can do. And then let go so we're not continually impacted by, you know, events in our lives that are ongoing.
Nicely put. And I can tell you that as you're speaking, I can visually think and see and probably place myself in different situations. And I know that our listeners who are going to listen to this are going to understand that in your summary, you can hear that there are many times that we're even willing to fight ourselves, but you were able to listen in and say, hey, the song not only brought this up for me, it gave me a global look at how things are changing. And you know what? I'm willing to allow those emotions to run. It's probably what I need. And many of us say, oh, you know what? You just needed a good cry and you feel better. A lot of us talk about maybe you needed to burn some steam. Whatever the scenario is for us to live out and play out, the emotions do matter. And I like how you referenced your book, which I want to talk about in just a second. Understanding how we defend ourselves to me sounds like a critical part of the healing and restoration, but I think it also is major to how we will continue to function. We, as cycle of life breakers, our families lived a life a specific way, didn't have the tools that we have now, the type of technology, and these guys did all right. And now when we compare the type of tools and strategies that we can apply, it seems that we have so much in an advantage point, but really it's not that way. Because when I look at how they did more with less, it just proves how cost effective they truly were. And shout out to everyone who's been able to live beyond those means using that. I want to talk about your book now, which I put up a link on my website. Thank you so much for having that promo. So when you go to the He's Just website and you click on 9 Pillars of Resilience, you will see a promo code. Thank you for sharing that with us. Tell us a little bit more about why this book is so important to you, Dr. Sai.
Sure. And thank you for that introduction to the book. You know, I've been doing my work in clinical psychology now for over 40 years, and I've seen the widest range of people impacted by childhood trauma, childhood stresses, as well as the stresses in everyday life. And life keeps getting more and more complex, and it's continually speeding up. And some people label the 21st century as the century of stress, as the main pandemic of our century, because life is speeding up as fast as it is. There's more and more to be done. So I wanted to find a model of resilience that is actually more than just resilience. It's a model of optimal functioning. A lot of times I do some work in corporations, and one of the difficulties that I face when I go into corporations is that people think that there's a dichotomy between production, producing and doing more and more on the one hand, and their health on the other, as if I'm going to do well and be successful at work, I have to sacrifice my health. And I wanted to create a model in which not only do you not sacrifice your health to be more successful in your life, but in fact, having optimal health, mind, body, spirit, emotions, actually facilitates your performance and being a peak performer. So my model is a model that integrates both optimal health and optimal performance in my 9 pillars of resilience. And it covers, let me just kind of give it to you very quickly. The first three have to do with relationship. The first is your relationship with yourself. And this is a place where most of us get stuck. We can be too critical of ourselves, too judgmental of ourselves, too hard on ourselves, or maybe we don't take in compliments, which is so important as a form of emotional nourishment. The second pillar is relationship with others. And in a relationship with others, we need to make the discrimination between healthy relationships and toxic relationships, relationships that actually help us become more calm and comfortable versus those that put us more on edge. Relationship with others is also about being able to set healthy boundaries with others for our own, as a way of taking care of ourselves. And so the third pillar of resilience is relationship with something greater. And this could be spirituality. It could be having meaning and purpose in our lives. It can be giving service. It's something that connects us to the larger community. The next three have to do with organismic balance and mastery. So the first is physical balance and mastery. So before we were talking about taking some time to recover the resources of our body, that's physical balance and mastery between the two branches of our nervous system. Next is mental balance and mastery, and this is our mindset. So do you wake up in the morning and you think about what can go wrong? Or do you wake up in the morning thinking about what can go right? Okay, because that sets the direction of your day. And it determines to a great extent how stressed you will be, how much you use up the resources of your body. So it's important to have a positive mindset. It's also very important to have a growth mindset. And at its fundamental level, a growth mindset says, if I notice a weakness in myself, a growth mindset says, okay, I have this weakness. How do I grow my ability to handle this weakness? As opposed to a fixed mindset in which if we notice a weakness, we just feel, oh my goodness, look, I have this weakness. Important distinction. And the sixth is emotional balance and mastery, which is very similar to emotional intelligence. And this is how we address and manage our emotions, recognizing that they are real, that we need to deal with them, and we can't carry emotions. We need to work on them, work them through so we can let go of them. Otherwise, we wind up with what's referred to as excess baggage, emotional baggage that gets in our way and causes us to react indiscriminately to situations in our lives. And then the last three have to do with how we engage in the world. Presence. And presence is two-directional. One is what we receive. Am I aware of my environment? Do I notice? Do I pay attention? But it's also the presence that we project out into the world. What energy do we project out? You know, something very interesting, Jules, if you and I were in the same room right now, standing next to each other, and I monitored your brainwave patterns, I will pick up my heart rate pattern in your brainwaves. Mm. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
And this ties into emotional balance, because if I'm projecting out positive emotions, emotions of gratitude, emotions of feeling good, my heart rate pattern is going to show what's referred to as a coherent heart rate pattern, a sinusoidal pattern in which as I breathe in, my heart rate goes up. As I breathe out, my heart rate slows down. That's optimal. And that helps us stay healthy. When we are frustrated, angry, in a negative emotional state, our heart rate pattern becomes chaotic. So we can understand why different people have different effects on us, because if we're close enough to them, we're picking up that difference in their heart rate patterns in our brainwaves. Mm. So the next is flexibility. And that's, you know, if you're stymied and you're reaching your goal, being flexible means I can either alter my goal or I can alter my path so that I'm more successful. Flexibility means I could put myself in your shoes. I could be flexible with my perspective so I can understand better where you're coming from. So that's the eighth pillar. And my final ninth pillar is power, which I define as the ability to get things done. And this includes courage. It includes persistence. It includes the ability to have a focus and to stay on track to reach success. And the more we are successful, the more we grow our capacity and the less affected we are by new stresses. So there you have the whole picture of a very comprehensive model of both resilience and optimal functioning.
Let me tell you, the book has not dropped. It's ready June 4th. And I'm going to tell you right now, already people who you have shared the book with, peers, critics of the field, etc., are just saying, what an amazing piece. Me personally, you had me at emotional nourishment. Anytime that we have an opportunity to dominate ourselves and you have it woven into emotional intelligence, self-esteem, but you have that relationship building that's in there. You have the core competencies to be mindful of how others are addressing us and looking at some of this work. You also have the ability of self-management. How am I going to react even to my own success and probably lack thereof? So really thrilled to learn more about this, but so taken aback about how you and so many people have talked about resilience, but how you carve this out in a way that is tangible, that people can relate to it and make it their own, which is where I think your model will separate itself from others, because many a times we have some science, we have some data, we have some information that's pertaining to a number of people based on age and ranking. But in your pillars, you're able to place thyself in the situation and figure out where are the areas that you're better, the ones you need to be probably better at, and how you can be flexible to challenge yourself and still have your own thermometer, if you will, to understand what are the steps. Such a treat. Thank you so much for that. I want to talk about such a book. What were the challenges for you? How many times did you go through this? Did you just pick nine? Did you think there were more pillars? Is there still some unfinished work here?
That's a good question. So the development of my model comes from all my years of working with people in working to help them deal with stress better. And this was the culmination of all of that work. But what was so important in me writing my book is not just to put the good information into the book. I wanted, from my experience in working with in workshops and other training programs and being in front of people, my real goal is for people not only to read this information, but to actually take it and use it and grow and develop greater resilience. I wanted, because I know people get discouraged when they read some of these books. They get overwhelmed by, oh my, there's so much that I need to be doing. And so in my book, I developed the notion of the path. Mm-hmm. And I define the path as being described by my nine pillars. So if you know my nine pillars and you know what it takes to get to grow any of these nine pillars, you're only steps away from being on the path. And unlike having a goal that's way down the road, oh, maybe someday I'll become resilient. My model and my approach is that, no, you can be resilient today by taking some simple steps to put you on the path. And so one of the things that I really strived to do in writing this book is to anticipate all the resistance, all the problems that people will bring up as they're reading, anticipate it and give them ways of addressing that before they even come to that resistance, so that I smooth the path and make it easier for people to follow and to stay with it. And in fact, that's the feedback that I've gotten in my programs from a lot of people, where they say, you know, Dr. Sidorov, you know, what I appreciate is that it feels like you wrote this, spoke about this specifically for me. You really understand me and what I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. And that's music to my ears, because then I know people are going to actually pay attention and continue on the path.
It is what I'm thinking of. I don't have the copy yet, but when it is out, I'm definitely going to get one. Let's talk about this. It is like a master guidebook. You have a guide. It's almost as if these type of books usually are very dense with information and heavy. This is a friendly style book that one day you can even just flip to any page, open the book, and kind of tap into ways that you can uncover better versions of yourself, or maybe areas that you have not examined about yourself that you probably know of but never worked on. And that's ways to build our resilience. Can you, you know, share with us a little bit about maybe some strategies or something that's in your book that you can share without giving too much away, that our listeners can utilize as simple steps that they can use? And you talked about taking the 3-minute breaths early. Are there other things that our listeners can tap into to kind of work their resilience and get better at before?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. And I'm happy to give as much information that would help your audience. So I'm going to talk about two things I think are very important. The first, which has to do with your relationship with yourself. And so the way we learn to cope in the world is by, you know, the lessons we learn in childhood. And through that development, we develop an internal voice, the voice we all hear 24/7, right? Mm-hmm. But for most of us, that voice can be a particularly critical, judgmental voice, or a negative voice, or a voice that identifies what's wrong before identifying what's right. And so in my first pillar, and for everybody here, I will suggest that the healthy internal voice, or what I refer to as an internal parent, is one that comes from a place of love, compassion, acceptance, support, care, and joy. Those are the qualities. Now, that becomes hopefully and potentially a new point of anchoring and grounding us that we want to develop. And so a lot of times when I'm working with a client and they're in a place of upset, I will say to them, if you're in a place of upset, 99 times out of 100, it's because right before that, you either consciously or unconsciously heard something negative from your existing internal voice. And so I talk to them about using being upset as a signal, as a cue to check in and check out the messages you're giving yourself and notice how negative or judgmental or critical they are. And then using those qualities of a healthy internal parent as your guide, speak to yourself from that imaginary internal parent. So I invite all of your audience to engage in that process on a regular basis with the intention and goal to ultimately shift your foundation from the existing internal parent to a new and healthier internal parent or voice. So that's at the heart of my first pillar of resilience. I'll give you a second technique that I think is very important. Most of us live carrying around some regret, some way that we are maybe hard on ourselves, still angry with ourselves for a mistake that we made. Why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. I'm so this or that because of what I did. And there are many reasons why we hold on to those mistakes and those judgments about those mistakes. But what I teach in my book and to people that I work with is that your goal is to live a life of no regrets. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you don't make mistakes. It simply means that you handle, work through and resolve those mistakes so you can let go of them and not continue to carry them. And so the process for doing that is first to notice the feelings connected to it. Okay, I'm angry with myself. Now, it's okay to be angry with yourself, but you want to find a way to express that anger with the goal of letting go of it. So I teach and encourage my people I work with to express their anger to themselves when that's there, but not to be abusive. And so you say, I'm angry that you did such and such, not you're stupid for doing that. Okay. So there are guidelines around how to express in a healthy way anger toward yourself in order to move through that and let go of it. So that's one. Two is to notice what the anger is about. And sometimes it's towards somebody else, and that's okay. You could be angry at somebody else. And by the way, if I'm carrying anger towards somebody else, it's my responsibility to deal with what I'm carrying. They may have done something that caused that anger, but I'm the one carrying that anger around with me, and it's bothering me, not bothering them, right? It's my responsibility to find a way to let go of it for my own good, not to let them off the hook, but for my own good. So it's noticing what it's about, recognizing that, and then when the anger is toward yourself for a mistake that you made, you want to in order to let go of the mistake, you want to think, what's the lesson that I can learn here so that I got some value out of the cost of the mistake to balance out the cost? Well, I learned to pay more attention in these situations, or I learned that this type of person I shouldn't be trusting, or whatever that lesson might be. So you learn the lesson to balance the cost, is the value to balance the cost of the mistake. And then you want to forgive yourself. And to forgive yourself, you say, I love myself, and so I want the best for myself. And right now, the best for myself is not to continue carrying this ongoing wounding of myself with my regret and anger toward myself. If I want to do better in the future, I will do better if I let go of this mistake. You forgive yourself, and then you let go. So those are two lessons I want to share with your audience that I think are so very important and are within the context of my model of resilience.
Groundbreaking. For me, as I'm listening to you once again, I'm visualizing and just speaking to myself, just thinking about ways as we continue to build our relationship with ourselves. I think it's critical in the buildup, what we create to build ourselves up. The things that you talked about, if I am having a struggle with someone, that's my own struggle. I don't want to validate, I'm mad and this guy is not the best person ever. And I'm making excuses for what the real work is. I should be focusing more around what I need to get better at, right, and things I need to avoid, because there's so much that's going on besides the conflict. And I'm internalizing this. I'm letting this toxicity come in. I'm letting the negative energy take over and kind of make decisions for me, maybe react emotionally, abruptly in different ways. And I think that that is a fantastic way for us to kind of build off this is to journal our own progress. No one is going to see how good or how bad you're doing this. Be intentional in how you focus on learning your own existence, building up your inner voice, and that inner voice to be about the positive. And as you continue to get better, you will find yourself in places. And I often tell people, if you think you're going to have a crappy day, try to say hello to as many people as you can. Try to get involved with helping someone else and not carrying on about what's bothering you so much. Because I think that we're better when we're helping someone else instead of trying to deal with our own stuff. It's like trying to teach your kid how to drive. I think you're better off letting the company or the people who get paid to do that to kind of do that for you. Can you share with us, there could be something here. You've seen so many people, even in your work as a professor, in the work, in the journeys that you have taken, is there a story of someone, as you were writing this book, with the many successes and things that you have done, that constantly is that reminder for you? That is a person that you say, I am better at my resilience because of. I am working towards being better to help more people because of this story. Do you have such a story that you can share with us?
Well, I'm happy to say that I have a lot of those stories. I'll share one. And this is with a gentleman who came to me after perhaps 30 or more years of therapy for anxiety and depression. Mm. And had a difficult childhood. His parents divorced when he was about 10, had very little contact with his father, sort of like an absent father, and a mother who is very critical of him. Very, no matter what, she would blame him. And so one of the ways that he learned to deal with all of that negativity was both to push his feelings down on the one hand, and then to dissociate on the other, to sort of not be fully present because his present was so painful to him. Mm. And so working with him over a few years, we worked through the 9 pillars of resilience, beginning with his relationship with himself. And I'll give you one example. This person actually in his business life was very successful. And then in his personal life, he gave a lot of service and was helpful to a lot of people. But because of his defensive posture through his childhood, he was unable to really own and take in his successes. Mm. And so that was a first step in the process was to, well, the first step was both on the one hand to recognize that as painful as it was in terms of how his parents dealt with him, that he developed an internal voice that was just as toxic as his parents. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem for most of us. We learn how to treat ourselves from the way our parents treat us. We don't know any better. You know, we're coming into the world as a tabula rasa, a blank slate. Mm-hmm. And so we just assume unconsciously that this is the way to do it. So it was to begin recognizing that, no, this isn't the only way you can treat yourself, because if you had a healthy internal parent, you would be treating yourself very differently. You'd be treating yourself this way. And so it was an ongoing and gradual process of helping him identify when he went into that negative and work toward finding a better and more appropriate and positive approach. And one of the ways I did this was using a Gestalt therapeutic technique of the empty chair. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I would actually have those two parts of him be in the room together. So I'd have two chairs, literally, and have him switch chairs. On one chair, he would come from that old negative internal voice, and then I'd have him shift into a newer, more positive voice, which to begin with, it was very tiny and very meek. But through the process of engaging here, we gradually shifted the balance of power between these two voices. You know, it took a while, but the important message to everybody in your audience is that it's doable and it's possible. Again, growth mindset. Mm. It's possible. And so little by little, he started taking in his successes. He also was very distant from his family because he was fearful. I like to think about the contact boundary, the place where we meet the outside world. For him, he learned to shrink away from that contact boundary. And so the people close to him experienced him as being distant. Little by little, he was able to move back and make better and better contact with his wife and children, and little by little go more into a place of joy and ultimately no longer feel either anxious or depressed as a result of going through that process.
Great story, and thank you so much for sharing. Love thyself and work on your own relationship with who you are. The floor is yours. Before we go, Dr. Siddharth, just let us go with what you want us to remember about you and your journey. We have information that I think is so useful. Tell us what you want us to remember about this movement.
So, I mean, I think that reflecting on our conversations, I think there's a lot in that for people to take away and use. One of the things I will say is that a lot of times when I work with clients and I show them the path, I show them what would be helpful. A lot of the times they do it reluctantly. A lot of the times they go, do I have to do that? Or if they don't say it, they're thinking that. And so I want to encourage everybody that whatever it is you feel needs to be done for your own growth, that you embrace the process. You eagerly embrace the process, because when you do it from a perspective of embracing, you will be more successful and the process will go faster. So always come from that place of embracing whatever the challenges are. And then the other thing I will say is, we talked about resilience, and people in general talk about resilience as bouncing back from adversity. And I'm propagating the notion and the message that that's an old myth and it's outdated. That in fact, what we want to do is bounce forward. Mm. Whenever we engage in a challenge, whenever we engage in a stress, we want to make sure and we want to identify a lesson we can learn from that experience so that when we come out of it, we're bouncing forward. We are better off than before we started that challenge. So we handle the next challenge from a place of growing capability.
Embrace the process and bounce forward.
Right.
As we venture beyond our limits, try to seize the opportunities to elevate yourself to higher intelligence. Prepare and propel yourself towards euphoric fulfillment. And this is the essence of being in the zone. There's no magic tricks, because on this platform it was built, because way too often as people, we were overlooked and labeled. But this is no longer. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town near you. We're out.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. we're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde De La Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.